Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Well, folks, it's now or never. And, you know, every once in a while, it's just, it's hard to get good news. It's hard to get, you know, motivated just because it just seems like we're pushing this boulder up this hill. But every once in a while, I actually take the time and I got a chance to talk to a state legislator who, and actually I've talked to a few over the years, but this one actually, you know, and just recently I've talked to actually a couple, but today I had a conversation and I was informed that they listen to my show and they listen to this show. They listen to the content. And this is, I can't impress upon you, but my goal is not to entertain you. My goal is to help get you straight in your head that you can make all the difference, that you can actually become a leader in our government. They created, the framers, the Lord designed a government that would anybody could serve. The only requirement, and everybody, many people, not everyone, many of the people in government today are failing. And sorry about that. It's probably somebody that's trying to tell me that my extended car warranty is, you know, out of coverage, or it's going to expire. They're trying to get a hold, you know the story. So anyway, apologize for the interruption. And more importantly, you have the ability, the framers actually created a system of governance that affords every person the opportunity to serve, and the only requirement is compliance to the Constitution. That's all you've got to do. And that's why so many people come in and they seize the, what we'll call, the corrupt opportunity before them, because there's lots of evildoers out there, whether they be bankers, corporations, or globalists, elitists, it doesn't matter. They're all using money to buy their souls. This is why we have a swamp, and this is why we have a constitutional crisis, because our public servants are up for sale. I mean, do you believe Joe Biden is actually doing what he believes is truly best in his own mind? No, he's doing exactly what he's being told to do. That guy couldn't even articulate what is going on and why it needs to be done. He's just a pawn. Obama was just a pawn. I mean, Obama may have, and Bill Clinton, they're all real pawns because they don't know what really some of the end games. And I'll even say this because I had a very interesting conversation a couple of weeks ago with an associate that I'm working with from the National Liberty Alliance. And we started talking about Jews and, you know, his view of Jews and how, you know, their evil influence they have over the world. And I pointed out to him that, you know, Adam Weishaupt was a Jew, and that, you know, this whole plan of destroying the earth was brought into existence. But that doesn't mean that we should actually, you know, throw all Jews into this, you know, category that they're all evil. You know, it was the tribe of the Lord, right? I mean, the tribe of David, or not Judah. I mean, the tribe of Judah. And under this, let me see here, the city of David, or what have you. He was born in the city of David, Nazareth, Nazarene. You know, all of these different things that really tied him into that tribe, into a very specific vicinage, and so forth. Because, I mean, when you go through the scriptures, I hate to, you know, I don't like to do this, but You know, even Christ pointed out that, you know, from the area, from Nazarene, you know, they rejected their own. I mean, all of these little facets that had something to do with either his location, where he was born, where he was from, where he grew up, and being a Jew. You know, it all was relevant, because I think that had he been born in a different tribe of Israel, that they probably would have been more accepting and so forth, that there was just this innate thing. You know, there's a certain families that have a culture of what have you. But to be clear, all of Israel, you can't throw all of Israel, you can't throw the baby out with the bathwater, and it's the same thing. And so anyway, I digress. I went down that rat hole. Let me get back to this conversation. It is obvious that we here are not here to entertain you, and it is obvious because I get the feedback that, you know, that this is a very informative radio show. We actually cover the content that you need to know, that actually I think if you go through from January 3rd to today, this year's show, we really do a great job in connecting all of the dots. And today we're going to be diving into the importance, because we kind of bypassed the oath of office. We went through the Republican form of government. We went through citizenship, you know, and the premise and the process and so forth. But we didn't dive into that oath. And I want you to understand. Well, we'll get into that when we get there. Let me get through the obligatory so that we can actually set the stage and then dive into the oath. As you know, tomorrow's Feedback Friday, and going through the ratification debates, when we start going through that soon, in the next few weeks, we will be maintaining Feedback Friday. So I will be injecting, even though it may be out of the clear blue, because I won't be talking about Feedback Friday when we're going through the ratification debates. Why? Because we've already canned the ratification debates as I dive through these things. You need to listen to these. And, you know, anybody that says, well, I've heard these before, it's kind of like reading the Old Testament, reading the New Testament, or what have you. Every time you read it, you will get something new from it. There's no doubt in my mind. These words are inspired words to help you understand in clarity how that Constitution was being defined. And this is so critical, because as they defined it, these became the legally binding terms and definitions of the Constitution. So I'm hoping maybe this next week, I'm hoping maybe I can get an interview or two with Paul Nally. And what we want to do is get into some other conversations. You know, as a matter of fact, I've had a few listeners approach me. Hey, I'm trying to get this, you know, this person running for Congress, this legislative, this governor, what have you. So I've had quite a few people say, I'm trying to get these people on your show. And I appreciate that. And as a matter of fact, you know, what you want to do, the way to do this is you really need to have that person publicly, you know, asked, hey, would you get on G.R. Mobley's show, because he wants to talk to you about the Constitution and how important the Constitution is to you? Because really, that's our focus, right? If we can help connect the dots and help find out, you know, how constitutional a person is, then that basically, you know, tells you whether this person is worthy. Because what we have right now in most races today is we have this plague of the lesser of two evils, and we've got to change that. And the only way to change that is by using this unorganized militia, the citizen vigilant movement, in taking back your counties. And technically, what we're talking about this year for this year's election, and what we could have been able to harvest this year, because as I'm going through all of these things, we're kind of losing time. I mean, November's just around the corner. We're in June already, folks. So we have to get this movement kickstarted. And if we're going to have positive effects, and we will have some positive effects, but not nearly the positive effects that we need to have. And some of it's, you know, I could say it's my fault because I'm way too busy. I can't do it all. That's why I need your help. I do. I need your help, and I need you to actually start doing these things that need to be done in your county and for your county. It's Kind of that simple. If you actually do these things, then you will actually be able to start rising to the top in, I'll just say, in leadership space, in your community, in your county, and actually be able to, I'll even say it, this is a path for people to become governor and actually, or legislator, or, you know, attorney general, depending on your expertise of law and governance and history and those types of things. You have a great opportunity to be able to become a Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, Roger Sherman, or any of these other great framers that, you know, history has basically accounted how well they have served us. So with that, let me just kind of go through the obligatories. As you know, the show is also sponsored by RepublicReview.org, and you're listening to the only show that goes through the academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions. Let me also tell you that you need to subscribe to the Wyoming Conservative Chronicle. And if you need constitutional education for your organization, go to constitutioneducation.us. Get these things, copy them, and, you know, while you're there, send Keith Broders a little bit of love. You know, I don't ask you to send me money. There's plenty of people that have asked and said, you know, and I've kind of come back to people and, well, I'm working on that. And, you know, getting money is not my priority. My service to you and this nation is my priority. And I know that there are people that actually need money because their conditions and circumstances are different. Give Keith some support. If you look at what he's doing, this guy deserves it. And so he deserves some help. And anyway, Stan Kluett with RadioDustCovers.com is where you can get your equipment protected. Go to RadioDustCovers.com. When we come back, we will actually dive into the oath, and I kind of set all of this up, why this is so important, and the paradigms of what we're going to be giving you. So you're going to love this, and this is really helping to set the tone. We'll be right back after this.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and their 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their Constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so I've said this probably a few times before, and I think it is imperative that I kind of yammer more about this. And as a matter of fact, I'll state it like this. How would you feel if the person that was running for governor this year in your state or seeking your vote for the legislative district, for the Senate that they're running for, the seat that they're seeking and asking your support and vote for, How would you feel if that person came out and basically informed you that their job is not to make sure you have jobs and make sure you have, you know, as a representative in government, that their job isn't to, you know, make deals and bringing money into the, you know, county, state, or into the federal government or what have you. That their real job is to support the Constitution and make sure it's being complied to, and that they understand the climate and what is going on in America today, that we're in a constitutional crisis because the noncompliance of the Constitution is so severe, so egregious, it is creating, you know, a huge pile of unconstitutional debt that needs to be wiped out. It is creating all of these incredible burdens and tyranny upon you. And that as a public servant, as somebody that you will vote for, they are committed to fulfill their oath of office. And then they explain to you that this oath of office is a legally binding, you know, documented. This is documented and legally binding. When they take an oath, it is actually recorded at the time and date you took that oath, because then you can be held accountable because it's legally done. See, most in you know, like in groups or what have you, they don't make a legal, you know, notarized or what have you to confirm that that was that oath that you administered as a part of the Liberty Caucus or a part of the party or whatever oath that you're taking. You know, they make it a contractual thing and it's kind of legally binding, but it is not the same as an oath of public office. And so you don't understand how sacred and how important these oaths of office really are. So this is why we're going to dive into this so much. And moving further on this public servant to say, I also want you to know that this oath and this concept was truly a divine concept, because does not, in God's plan as a Christian, is it not within reason for us to be held accountable? Does not God want us and all of us? And does not he promise blessings when we obey? Is he not accountable to the law, his own law? Absolutely. His hands are tied, but his will be done. And so when we really look at it, you know, sometimes I've seen people say, you know, I've followed this law and I deserve the blessings and I'm not getting it. Well, there's something else. There's something else that you did that actually took away the reason why you didn't get that blessing. Because the law is the law. And that's the same thing with our Constitution. The law is the law. And so what I'm really telling you is that here is a person that is putting it on the line to tell you that if you elect them, they will fulfill that oath of office and support that Constitution. And in so doing, they also explain to you Section 3 of the 14th Amendment that, oh, by the way, if I fail to support the Constitution, it is viewed and actually falls into the category of moral perjury. Therefore, hold me accountable. Use Section 3 against me if I actually violate the Constitution, if I support and give comfort and aid to those who are violating it. If I play the game of politics with your liberties, hold me accountable and remove me from office. And I will work in empowering you and making it easier for you, and a process, a legitimate process that one protects the integrity of one, the oath and the office, as well as protects your right to remove me. In other words, here's a person that is absolutely putting it on the line to say, you know, until we can hold government and public service fully accountable and make it easier to remove judges and to remove any public servant, I will not rest, because that is the supreme law. That was baked into this Constitution, that we had the ability. Now, to be clear, I want you to understand that the process isn't just necessarily say, hey, you violated that. If the person in public office, because it could be easily rused, and this was brought up to a person that's running a campaign in a legislative district that the primary is coming up in August, and we were talking about this, and he goes, I could see that being used for evil. And I go, not if you follow the law, because if that person wants to claim and defend their position on what they did, then that would go, that person would then have a right to actually defer this to a common law court, not into a court of law, but into a common law court, where the judge and jury would be those people from that legislative district. If it's a senator from the state, it would go to the people of the state, you know, a grand jury of the state for a U.S. senator, or if it's a state. So if you understand what I'm saying, those who that person was put into office on, they should be the ones in a common law government and a land where common law is the rule of law, then that's how it should be decided whether that person did or not. I mean, you know, if you actually have and you state the case in a First Amendment petition exactly how a person and you connect the dots, that person is going to have a hard time defending themselves, especially if you did a good job in connecting the dots. And I would expect people to do that. However, I honestly believe, and this has to be a part of this, that any person that does defend themselves and the common law grand jury, you know, actually, because, you know, and there are courts of appeal for common law, by the way. It's not all done at just one level. I just want you to understand that, because it can be appealed to the state and it can be appealed up and above. But it does not have any place in civil law courts, which is the court system we have, which is basically based on admiralty law and so forth. And so what we would have to do is we would have to create a common law grand jury for the state. So in other words, it would really make it hard. It would really make it very, very hard, because it would be broken down by the way it should be done by the county, right? So if you have 40 counties in your state, your common law grand jury would be seated by 40 people, one representative from each county, because you can't go by legislative district, because that way population centers would actually have advantages, you know, by apportionment and so forth. So what we're trying to say is there is a way of actually doing this fair and protecting this. And it's not hard. I mean, actually, this was done back in Moses' day when he set up the land and the law of judges, in laying out judges and how they would govern, you know, these indiscretion, sins, and what have you. And so anyway, let me move forward. Because what we wanted to basically do is try to create this paradigm of how would you view that public servant that's doing this? I mean, I would sum it up as here is a righteous public servant that has actually gets the spirit of governing in this Constitution. Just want you to understand this. If you understand a person that is willing and actually wants to empower you, we the people, to be able to use the Constitution as designed, because Section 3 of the 14th Amendment was designed for we the people, just like the First Amendment petition was designed for we the people in holding public servants accountable. We can't allow star chambers or little echo chambers to seize the control of all of this, because you can see what's happened. If we can't enforce the law, and oh, by the way, who's supposed to enforce and execute the laws of the union? You know this. If you've listened to this show for any period of time, the laws that are to be executed, the laws of the union, the only entity that has the constitutional authority to execute the laws of the union are not the FBI. It is the militia. Because show me in the Constitution where the FBI has the authority in the Constitution. Show me in the Constitution where they even have the authority to have an army like the FBI. Now, I know there's lots of great people in the FBI, but they need to be in the militia. And they actually need to be a part of this, you know, this constitutional system instead of this system of unconstitutional government. We get into this, and I'm just telling you, make sure you mark your calendars for September 17th. We're going to go through the Constitution line by line. And, you know, a lot of the topics, a lot of the issues we cover throughout this year will actually help elevate and help you understand each of these issues. But today, our focus is on the oath of office. So what we need to do is we need to help you get into the framers' view of the oath of office. And so what I did was I highlighted. Now, I don't go through the oath in the ratification debates segment. At least I haven't yet this year. I will in the subsequent years because I think it is imperative. And forgive me for not covering it before. But this is how they went through and described the oath of office. Now, Governor Randolph in the Virginia ratification debates, he said this. Freedom of religion is said to be in danger. I will candidly say I once thought that it was, and I felt great repugnance to the Constitution for that reason. I am willing to acknowledge my apprehensions removed. And with that, I don't want to bleed into this break again, so we'll be right back after these two promos, and then I'll basically pick it up from the beginning. The freedom of religion is said to be in danger, and from there, we will actually go through these citations for you. You're going to love this. We'll be right back.
Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, let's pick it off from the top there. Governor Randolph again. Freedom of religion is said to be in danger. I will candidly say, I once thought that it was and felt great repugnance to the Constitution for that reason. I am willing to acknowledge my apprehensions removed, and I will inform you by what process of reasoning I did remove them. You gotta love this. The Constitution provides that, quote, the senators and representatives before mentioned and the members of the several state legislatures and all executive and judicial officers, both of the Constitution and of the several states, shall be bound by oath or affirmation to support this Constitution. But no religious test shall ever be required as a qualification to any office or public trust under the United States. Okay, now, what that basically states is that only applied to the United States, right? It has been said that if the exclusion of the religious test were an exception from the general power of Congress, the power over religion would remain. I inform those who are of this opinion that no power is given expressly to Congress over religion. Now, I want to take a second here, and I want to highlight this. Well, so what did the federal government do regarding the Scopes trial in teaching creation versus evolution? Do you have any evidence when they defined the Constitution how, you know, the federal government could not get involved or meddle on anything regarding religion? Well, you do now, folks. He clearly just stated, I informed those who are of this opinion that no power is given expressly to Congress over religion. This is why the Constitution was ratified without the Bill of Rights. The senators and representatives, the senators and representatives, members of the state legislatures, and executive and judicial officers are bound by oath or affirmation to support this Constitution. This only binds them to support it in the exercise of the powers constitutionally given. The exclusion of the religious test is an exception from this provision with respect to oaths or affirmations. Although officers, and etc., are to swear that they will support this Constitution, yet they are not bound to support one mode of worship or to adhere to one particular sect. It puts all sects on the same footing. A man of abilities and character of any sect, whatever, may be admitted into any office or public trust under the United States. Now, this was the thinking of the framers. To be honest, many of the people in America at the time did not like this because they wanted to be able to have only their guys in. But because it was a republic and at the national level, it was really impossible to do that. However, there was one group of people that were kept out of office at the national level and out of the presidency for, two centuries, right? Practically, because a Catholic did not make it to the presidency until John F. Kennedy. And that was almost two centuries later. I mean, the bicentennial was like 10 some odd years, 15, 16 years later. Yeah, because he was elected in 1960. So my point is that even though they created this framework that held everybody to the Constitution by these oaths, what really, you know, the way the people still acted was they still operated under their religious biases that we can't allow these people in. Bottom line, because everybody was focused on their religion and their religious doctrine and biases, it kept them away from actually understanding the Constitution and holding people accountable to the Constitution instead of their religious dogma. And this is why we are the problem. We have to recognize that the Constitution gives the federal government the necessary powers and nothing more. It does not allow them to spend money on things they have no authority to spend. So let me move on. I'm a friend to a variety of sects because sext, S-E-C-T-S, okay? I know enunciations can be kind of hard to tell. Because they keep one another in order. How many different sects are we composed of throughout the United States? How many different sects will be in Congress? We cannot enumerate the sects that will be in Congress, and there are so many in the United States that they will prevent the establishment of any one sect. In prejudice to the rest, and will forever oppose all attempts to infringe religious liberty. Well, you would think that. But I'm stopping here. What happened in 2012, my friends? What happened in 2012? In other words, so many people were so biased on Mormons that they felt better in allowing a Muslim, a hybrid Muslim, because he had these Christian ties as well. But a hybrid Muslim, Obama, to get reelected instead of voting for Romney. I truly believe at that point in time, he was the lesser of two evils. America would have been better off with Romney. Now, we have seen Romney go through some significant changes, but if you compare Romney in his, you know, in his interview with Sean Hannity, if you compare Romney during that campaign of presidency, everything he said and did actually I supported. But I'm just telling you, that what he just said here points out how we operate as a nation within this ocean of biases that we seem and actually we see it as an ocean of biases, but everybody's swimming in their own little cup. And it literally is their own little cup because they're not willing to swim with anybody else. We're so polarized on this. And this, to me, I think is an egregious sin. Because we really do not have faith. One, we don't have faith in the Constitution. We don't have faith in our fellow man. And we're not willing to unite. And I believe some of the scourge that we're suffering today may be more relative to our unwillingness to put aside our differences than it is to the evil that's overcoming us. Because bottom line, if we put aside our differences, we could easily overcome the evil. It's that easy. It's basic math, folks. If such an attempt, and going on to what he said, if such an attempt be made, will not the alarm be sounded throughout America? If Congress should be as wicked as we are foretold they will be, they would not run the risk of exciting resentment of all or most for the religious sects or most of the religious sects in America. So, it's interesting. They were that way until today. They've gone so far that they can now actually go against all Christianity. In other words, over the past century, the federal government has successfully created the Antichrist Church under our very nose. And that's why they are now persecuting Christians and coming after anybody who has a resemblance of a Christian belief. Prove me wrong, okay? Now, this is what James Monroe said, and I want to highlight this because this right here happens to be an anti-federalist. And James Monroe, here's giving you a paradigm that I think, you know, will help you go, oh my gosh, wow, he's an anti-federalist and he's saying this? Listen to what he says. Another circumstance will operate in its favor. So he's talking about the Constitution. And this is June 10th. In other words, this is early on in the ratification debates. The ratification debates started like on the 6th, and they went a few weeks. And so this is still in the first week, but he's already pointing out a positive. Another circumstance will operate in its favor in case of a contest. The oath that is to be taken to support it will aid it most powerfully. The influence with the sanction of oaths has on men is irresistible. The religious authority of divine revelation will be quoted to prove the propriety of adhering to it and will have great influence in disposing men's minds to maintain it. Wow. I mean, he was actually saying a good thing about the Constitution. But why? Why was this so unique? And I'm going to show you because some of these other comments will actually give you, in contrasting to Britain and other governments, why this Constitution, because these oaths made it different. In England, so this is Mr. McLean down in North Carolina. In England, the lords who try impeachments declare solemnly upon honor, whether the persons impeached be guilty or not. But here, the senators are on oath. This is a happy security because it's a legally binding position, not just an honor position. And so we have actually muddied the water in making people believe that an oath of office is really more of an honorable thing. No, there's a legal process, and these people need to be held legally accountable to their oaths of office, which Section 3 enforces. But as you can tell, we've ran out of time. We still have a few more citations. So if we don't get through all of these because of my editorializing, then we will, you know, go through this whole gamut of oaths as we follow through, because we're not going to just go over the citations, because you need to understand the whole context of what they said and what we and our paradigm, what we need to do.
I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so Mr. McClain goes on to say this. I mean to lessen the expense, but he imagines that the oath to be taken by officers will tend to the subversion of our state governments and our liberty. Can any government exist without fidelity in its officers? Ought not the officers of government be government to give some security for the faithful discharge of their trust? The officers are only to be sworn to support the Constitution. And I'm going to add here, not the party, not the office, not an individual to follow anybody and their whims and their discretion of what needs to be done in governing. No, the Constitution alone. And so he goes on and says, and therefore will only be bound by their oath so far as it shall be strictly pursued. There's the problem. Are we strictly pursuing our public servants in obeying the Constitution? Folks, this is the problem. I don't know how many people, I can't tell you, as long as I've been in the Patriot movement, I can't tell you how many times I have heard people say, boy, they take an oath, can't we hold them accountable? Absolutely. It's right there in the Constitution. You know, anybody that was alive before the 14th Amendment that made that complaint, you know, actually had a legitimate, you know, complaint. Because, you know, what was the process for the people other than the First Amendment process? But Section 3 of the 14th Amendment clarifies this. If they commit moral perjury, if they fail to support the Constitution, then they have to be removed because they're ineligible. They have committed moral perjury, and therefore they can no longer be in service. That's what Section 3 of the 14th Amendment literally states. And that's how it was defined. That's why I tell everybody, go through the 14th Amendment debates in Congress. They're on my website. You can get all 263 pages. Read it. You tell me, as they boiled down and distilled this 14th Amendment in all of these 263 pages, it became clearer and clearer and clearer. The intent was to hold people accountable. And actually, I have some citations that I'm going to get to where Senator Howard actually says that. It wasn't about just holding the South accountable, but for all future generations, to hold them accountable to their oath of office, that rebellion could never arise in America again. And look at what's going on, folks. We actually have a Bolshevik revolution that's happening in our streets that's being basically orchestrated out of Congress in the White House today. We actually have people in public service that are violating their oath of office in operating a coup against the Constitution. Again, like I said, I'm not here to entertain you. I'm here to get you motivated and get you involved. And that's what we need to do. Anyway, as he goes on and says, and see, let me find out where we left. I mean to lessen the expense, but he imagines that the oath will be taken by officers to attend. You know what? I think I've read all of this. So let me go on to James Iredell. Let me move into that one. According to the modern definition of an oath, so he's giving you the definition of the time, it is considered a, quote, solemn appeal to the supreme being for the truth of what is said by a person who believes in the existence of a supreme being and in the future state of rewards and punishments according to that form which will bind his conscience most. Now, if you understand what he just said, I mean, how is it that we've moved so far away from what an oath is? Oh, it's just a function. No. These people have this solemn appeal. They have to be held accountable, and they will be held accountable. If you understand the Constitution and the divine hand of providence, and you believe there is a creator, these people will be held accountable. He goes on, Mr. Iredell goes on and says, it was long held that no oath could be administered but upon the New Testament, except to a Jew who was allowed to swear upon the old. According to this notion, none but Jews and Christians could take oath, and heathens were altogether excluded. At length, by the operation of principles of toleration, these narrow motions were done away. Men at length considered that there were many virtuous men in the world who had not had an opportunity of being instructed either in the Old or New Testament, who yet very sincerely believed in a supreme being and in a future state of rewards and punishments. It is well known that many nations entertain this belief who do not believe either in the Jewish or Christian religion. Indeed, there are a few so grossly ignorant or barbarous to have no religion at all, and if none but Christians or Jews could be examined upon the oath, many innocent persons might suffer for the want of the testimony of others. In regard to the form of an oath, that ought to be governed by the religion of the person taking it. I remember to have read an instance which happened in England, I believe in the time of Charles II. A man who was a material witness in a cause refused to swear upon the book and was admitted to swear with his uplifted hand. The jury had a difficulty in crediting him, but the Chief Justice told them he had, in his opinion, taken as strong as an oath as any other man witnesses. Though he had been to swear himself, he should have kissed the book. A very remarkable instance also happened in England about 40 years ago of a person who was admitted to take an oath according to the rites of his own country, though he was a heathen. He was an East Indian who had a great suit in Chancery, and his answers upon oath to a bill filed against him was absolutely necessary. Not believing either in the Old or New Testament, he could not be sworn in to the accustomed manner, but was sworn according to the form of the Gentoo religion, which he professed by touching the foot of the priest. It appeared that according to the tenets of this religion, its members believed in a supreme being and in a future state of rewards and punishments. It was accordingly judged by the judges upon great consideration that the oath ought to have been received, they considering it that it was probably those of that religion were equally bound in conscience by an oath according to their form of swearing, as they themselves were by their heir, by one of theirs. And that it would be a reproach to the justice of the country if a man merely because he was a different religion from their own should be denied redress of an injury he had sustained. Ever since this great cause, it had been universally considered that in administering an oath, it is only necessary to inquire if the person who is to take it believes in a supreme being and in a future state of rewards and punishments. If he does, the oath should be administered according to that form which is supposed to bind his conscience most. It is, however, necessary that such a belief should be entertained, because otherwise there would be nothing to bind his conscience that could be relied on. Since there are many cases where the terror of punishment in this world for perjury could not be dreaded, I have endeavored to satisfy the committee. We may, I think, very safely leave religion to itself, and as to the form of the oath, I think it may be well trusted to the general government to be applied upon the principles I have mentioned. Now, it is important that I add here, because we still have a couple more citations, at least one more citation, and it's Mr. Parsons, and he is in the state of Massachusetts. So we've had Virginia, North Carolina, and then Massachusetts. So we get a little cross-section of the 13 states. And so what I need to invoke here is you need to understand that in many of the cases with Thomas Jefferson, he was not allowed to testify because he was not a Christian in good standing. So in other words, the court system that was operating here in America required that you not only be Christian, because when you took that oath, you had to be a Christian in good standing. In other words, you were active and in good standing in your community and in your church. And so how did they know this? The sheriff would then report to the judge, you know, if this person was to stand trial, he would report to the judge that that person isn't in good standing. So in other words, there was a notice. The sheriff would actually see who was in the notice, and he would actually find out, you know, is this person in good standing or not? As we became more and more populated and more churches and so forth, it became very onerous for the sheriff to even be involved. But if you read Joseph Story's commentaries, Joseph Story clarified that they could not trust in America at that point in time any person that could not be held accountable. In other words, atheists. Now, Thomas Jefferson was not an atheist, but as we evolved, and this happened before the Constitution, by the way, with Thomas Jefferson, but as we evolved as a nation, Alexis de Tocqueville in 1833 noted and actually put it in his Democracies in America, and you can read that citation in my book, or you can go look for it, where a judge threw out an atheist in his case because he was an atheist and the court could not take any faith and confidence because he was not Christian in good standing. And that's why I point to Joseph Story in his commentaries on the Constitution, that Joseph Story really helped everybody understand that the reason why they had this parameter that you had to be Christian in good standing was because if not, you were basically an infidel and you would do anything to serve yourself and not God. And so I'm just trying to give you this framework. We'll get into the rest of the citations when we pick this back up in, on Feedback Friday. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm
regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.